Good afternoon. Welcome to the Healthy Aging Show. I'm Dennis Batuas.
I'm Joanne Del Greco.
And John is out playing with some game that they're offering $1 million for the 15th caller. But this is tape, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah, no technician today for us.
We are going to be talking about issues about getting older, intelligent aging, lessons for life. And we are brought to you by Comfort Keepers nationwide, locally in Lower Fairfield County. We help people stay safe and independent in their own home. And we have many clients that say, I want to stay in my own home, and we help them do it. You can reach us at 203-629-5029, and we provide non-medical in-home care. How often have you been in a hospital or any type of operating room?
Me?
You.
Me. I have been 3 times.
Okay. I've been 5.
Well, you're fortunately, a repeat
offender. Fortunately, they're all for repairing things that I broke. But in each case, in each of my cases, I had to be put to sleep. Anesthesiologist administered it. And, you know, I don't think that I gave a second thought to it.
No, not at all.
Well, we're going to give first thought to it today because we have with us an anesthesiologist from Stanford Anesthesia Associates, Dr. Betty Ann Robustelli. And she is from the practice which is in Stanford. And you are under contract with Stanford Hospital.
Yes, we are.
So you are the people. You are the group that puts everybody under.
Yes.
All right.
And they bring them right back out again.
Well,
most important.
That's a good thing. The more we talked about this in preparation, and this has been Dawn's pet for the longest time, and it was evidenced by all of the research that she did in preparation. But it's an underknown mm-hmm. practice, procedure. And is it fair to say that people don't give a second thought to this?
Some people do. Some people are very frightened about the anesthesia. But then there are other people that really, like you said, they don't really even think about it. They just say, put me to sleep and wake me up when it's over.
Well, you know who your doctor that's performing the procedure is.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But how often does someone make it a point to find out who the doctor is that's helping or making it able for the doctor to do the
right.
procedure.
Do you find that perhaps the longer the surgery, the indication, if it's something like an open heart surgery versus joint replacement or other types of surgeries, is any one group more prone to check into their anesthesiologist?
I think parents with young children, that's mm-hmm. one of the groups that really looks into who's taking care of their child. But not overall, I really think that there's sort of lack of understanding or awareness about what is going on in the operating room, and they just assume that.
And in some ways, or in some instances, your role is more critical than the surgeon's, because
right.
if not administered properly, the damages could be devastating, and the operation may be minor.
Right. I mean, that's a lot of the times what does happen.
Right.
Or if the surgeon gets into trouble, we're the one that really has to be their backup.
Step in and close the breach.
Right.
I think we assume so readily that we're in safe hands and don't give it a second thought when we look at what the history with anesthesia has been. You know, all of us have seen the Western where pliers come out.
It's progressively gotten safer and safer and safer.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at the statistics that I saw, the amount or number per thousands or millions of procedures where there was problems just decreased dramatically over the last 20 years.
That's true. I think the medications are much more safe now. There's a lot more research about the medications. And also the monitoring potential that we have, where years ago they just didn't have the sophisticated monitoring that we can do now. We could monitor about if the patient's awake by looking at their EEG, and all their vital signs can be monitored non-invasively or with, you know, invasive monitors.
Mm-hmm.
And it really makes anesthesia much more safe now than it was before.
Well, the fact that we've had so much research that has developed medications and procedures, it only goes to logic that we would have the same level of research into ways of alleviating pain and making that process of anesthesia and its administration that much more safer.
Now, when you're looking at how the drugs have come along, we're still using opiates, is that right?
Yes.
And looking back, historically speaking, cocaine, I guess, I don't know what the proper word with the opiates were, that were, you know, the prerequisites of what we have now and what we're using and how they've been modified and improved.
Right.
Intravenous or how
is that? Yeah, there's intravenous opioids or narcotics, and there's oral versions of them. You know, it's a big class of drugs that are used really across the board that still have a huge amount of side effects associated with them. That, unfortunately, has not changed. But, you know, dosing has been really looked into a lot. And then there's other modes of pain management that, in combination with the opioids, have then decreased the side effects by using a combination of drugs. So they are still the mainstay for pain management.
Is there a definition of anesthesia? Because we know that it is used to suppress pain.
Yes.
But it's also to suppress memory. And does it also paralyze?
Yeah, in certain instances, yes, paralysis is needed. There's really a wide range of anesthetics, if you'd like to call them. You know, we can anesthetize just one part of the body that's being operated on, and you can be wide awake. Some surgeries are not amenable to that, where they need to be totally unconscious, and that we've taken over the respirations for them, so they're intubated on a ventilator and paralyzed. So there's a wide range, and it really certain procedures are amenable to certain anesthetic, and we try and use whichever technique will have the least side effects, especially with the elderly and with the newborn and the young children. That's really kind of the age groups that are very sensitive.
Well, dosing, as in any other kind of medication for those age groups, is dramatically different
than
for a normal mature adult.
Right. You know, with pediatrics, it's a per kilo dosing scale. The trouble is with the elderly population, just because there isn't the magic number that you reduce a dose for the elderly. It's really, you know, you have to look at their comorbid conditions and their sort of overall health to be able to say, okay, this person's not going to really tolerate what someone else that's the same age would tolerate. But there's no, you know, in pediatrics, it's much more of a formula. But with the elderly, there's not that formula that we can use.
Health, lifestyle, their metabolism, everything's got to come into play.
Yes.
And that definitely, when you're starting with an infant, they're kind of coming from the same baseline.
Yes.
Whereas now you've got a group of people that have got 70 or 80 years of mixed good and bad history.
Usage.
Go back to the car. A lot of miles on that body.
Now, how does a team, as a patient, when a patient is scheduled to come in for a procedure, how do you and everyone else in that operating room, how does that team function? How do you plan what's going to happen as far as the type of anesthesia?
What's happening in the background?
The pre-planning, yeah. What's the behind the stage here? Well, now we'll go to theater with behind the stage.
Right. There's a lot of pre-planning in actually the OR, for the nurses, for whatever instruments they need to do. So the room is really all prepared according to what the surgeon has told them and how they're going to approach, as opposed to, you know, if they can do it laparoscopically or an open procedure. So there's a lot of things that the surgeon will communicate to the nursing staff that's in the room. And then we meet the patients really just before they're going to go into the operating room. We do see most of the charts, hopefully about a week before. We don't meet the patients, but we see their history and, again, their medical conditions and anything that is kind of a red flag to us that we can investigate and get all the information. They need to get a cardiac evaluation beforehand, pulmonary evaluation. Hopefully we have all that information approximately a week beforehand to be able to do that. But then we don't really meet the patients until a few minutes before. And again, based on their medical conditions and the surgical procedure, we decide on what the anesthetic would be best for that patient. And, you know, we have a discussion with them. Certain people, you know, are not amenable to certain anesthetics. So, you know, you have the discussion because they really kind of make the final decision. And that's where the planning side of starts. And then that's conveyed to the nursing staff that's in the operating room, as well as the surgeon. And we just work as a team once the patient's in the OR.
You bring up a good point, too. I hadn't thought about this, but we did not have as many tests previously before surgeries as we do now. And I think we've become,
ferret out what conditions you might be dealing with. Because and that probably reveals things that you may know from the history of the patient or that they haven't told you.
Yes.
Or the patient may not know either.
Well, and that's true. But how important is full disclosure by the patient to the doctor or the staff?
Right. I mean, that's very important. And a lot of, in the pre-op evaluation, we have found many illnesses that were unknown to the patient. I've had a couple cases where they've had just pre-op EKGs that were abnormal, and then they ended up going for, you know, cardiac catheterizations and angioplasties and stent. Just pre-op, I mean, with no history or, you know, really unknown to the patient, or we've made lung cancer diagnoses because they have chest x-rays pre-op, just as a routine screening tool. and diagnose these things pre-op. So the screening tools are really important. And also, like you're saying, the disclosure. You just need to, you know, tell us about your illicit habits. Like I said, we're not there to judge. We just need to know because of the interactions with a lot of our medications can really be, you know, detrimental. So the important thing is just to really be forthcoming and really come with a list of your medications. A lot of patients have no idea. They'll say to me, it's the little white pill. You know, and it's really, you know, it's really very important. And I always tell them just, you know, well, keep a list in your wallet.
Could they bring the meds in with them?
Yes.
Just so that you could take a look at them.
A lot of times they'll come in with all their bottles and that's fine too. And, or just a list of their medications. Cause really a lot of people don't know that. And it makes it very difficult to try and backpedal, call people at home to get the meds that they're on. And like I said, to medication, when they last ate or drank is another huge problem that we find that, you know, there's a certain amount of hours that you have to abstain from eating and drinking for safety reasons. And patients think you're just being difficult and they don't follow those directions. And then it really can lead to catastrophic events.
Well, like so many people take aspirin for therapeutic purposes, and that's only going to accelerate bleeding.
Yes.
So they have to stop it so many days
usually a week in advance.
But there's the herbal supplements as well that we don't even think about those bottles.
Well, exactly. And that's something that we keep on driving home, that when you are talking to any of your doctors, letting them know all of these things, because the interaction, not just for surgical purposes, just for basic interaction with drugs that they may prescribe.
Right. A lot of the homeopathic medications that people are on now are just really important to divulge. I mean, with ginger and the garlic, and there's a lot of things that really interfere.
Garlic?
Yeah.
Well, I didn't know about garlic.
Yeah, garlic is...
What does garlic do?
It causes bleeding.
Really?
They make you stop any garlic supplements.
They're
going
to my
surgery.
Entire cuisine. I'll be to eat for a week before that.
I'm not sure that garlic...
You have to eat huge amounts of garlic.
It's when you take it as a supplement.
Here's ginger. I mean, that's another.
Right. I mean, I think eating it, probably the quantity you would have to eat is.
What you have with your sushi and what you have with other foods is, you know, don't worry about that.
I can tell she had garlic before she got here.
Well, that's why they wear masks.
That's right. Absolutely. Now, how do we shop as the patient for a good anesthesiologist? What should we look for to know that we're getting quality care?
It is difficult because...
Do you have a choice?
Right. I mean, you do have a choice among anesthesiologists within the group.
Right.
And word of mouth is a big thing that you can either ask your surgeon or really ask someone in your family
or
friends.
So someone says, I want the tall guy with the mask?
Yes.
Most of them are when you're laying down.
I know. Well, these people are working in the background, and it's not that you folks are the stars that the surgeons are. So how do you get... And you don't want to get well-known by notoriety in the newspaper, so you want word of mouth that they did a good job, but doing a good job almost brings you no recognition.
Right. I mean, that's, you know...
It's a catch-22.
It is. But, I mean, most people do. I think people that have had multiple surgical experiences, they will find that, okay, this was a much better experience.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I find. And they'll ask you who you are. They try to give all the patients, there's actually a card that they're all given, that everyone that took part in their care, from who greeted them when they came into the hospital, the surgical scrub techs in the OR, everyone who they came in contact with, including us, just so you know who took care of you. So it's an interesting... you know, concept, because there are a lot of people in the background that, you know, everything went fine because all these people took care of you. So I think that's, you know, just the information is getting out there more.
Right.
But really, I mean, you can look on, you can web, you know, go onto the internet now and do, you know, search on us just like any other doctor, see where we were trained. We could look at our malpractice history. You know, all that's there.
There's a lot of disclosure out there. We're going to jump to a break, but we're talking with Dr. Betty Ann Robustelli from Stanford Anesthesia Associates, and we will be right back. Stay tuned. Stay awake.